for podcasting going forward. You're already starting to see the research is starting to show that the number one discovery method now for finding a podcast that you might want to listen to is via search. And that's not search inside of Apple Podcasts. That's search inside of Google.
Hi, and welcome to the Innovative Mindset Podcast. I'm your host, Isolde Trachtenberg. On the show, you get my conversations with peak-performing thought leaders, creatives, and entrepreneurs. Every week, I bring you the latest scoop on what these incredible people do to succeed and how you can get their secrets and do it too. Whether we're talking about best practices for spending time creating, how to work the business part of your business, or how to keep in that innovative mindset so you can keep living and performing, you'll get practical and wise information to use in your work and in your life. And now, let's get on with the show. Hey there, and welcome to the Innovative Mindset Podcast. My name is Isolde Trachtenberg. I am your host, and I am thrilled that you're here. I'm also incredibly thrilled and honored to have today's guest. You've got to hear this. Rob Greenlee is the Vice President of Content and Partnership of Libsyn, which, by the way, means Liberated Syndication. Wonderful title, wonderful name of the company. He's the former chairperson of the Podcast Academy and is a well-known evangelist of the podcasting industry and was inducted into the Academy of Podcasters Hall of Fame in 2017. He formerly served as the vice president for podcast relations at Voxnet Spreaker, we all remember Spreaker, and as head of partnerships and head of content. Rob has a long and storied history on nationally syndicated terrestrial broadcast radio, and I can't wait to talk about that too, starting in 1999, then webcast and podcast. Web Talk World Radio Show was heard on XM Satellite Radio and is recognized as the first broadcast radio program in the world to begin podcasting back on September 15th, 2004. I'm so thrilled to welcome you, Rob. Thank you so much for being here.
Well, it's great to be on the show. I appreciate the invitation.
It's absolutely my pleasure and my honor. Now, I'm so curious about the trajectory of your career because your degree is in business administration and you got a concentration in marketing and you started kind of differently. You started a ways away from broadcast in the grocery industry, I understand. What led to that transition from one to the other for you so that now you're this evangelist for podcasting?
Well, coming from marketing, I was very traditional trained marketing person working with TV, radio, and billboards and promotions and things like that, and worked in the grocery industry for many years and owned a restaurant too for a while. Worked for the Florida Department of Citrus for many years. And that was during, a lot of that time period was during the very early days of the development of the World Wide Web and the internet. So I started shifting my emphasis in my marketing interests over towards looking at the internet and the web as a marketing tool. So that's what took my interest that direction. I was very much an offline type of person in the early days prior to the internet. So I have that in my background and have worked, without the internet for many years. And then once the internet started to form, I started building websites and I started doing some consulting work, working with smaller companies to get them indexed in places like Yahoo and Alta Vista and the upstart of Google in the early days. Mm-hmm. And so I started getting involved in digital marketing back in those days and thought at the time, I wanted to grow my search engine marketing consulting business, so I went into a radio station and asked them, a local radio station up in the Seattle market, and asked them if they had a show on tech or the internet, and they didn't. So I started doing a live radio show on this local station in the Seattle market and did it every Saturday morning for a couple of years, and then I wound up taking it out of the radio station and building my own studio. This was in like 2001, 2000, and started producing it as a pre-produced thing because I was working full-time for online startup companies back then. So I didn't have a lot of time just to dedicate specifically to doing the radio show, so I started producing it in segments during the week, and then it would be distributed on Saturdays. on all these platforms, whether it be radio or on demand or streaming or on public radio stations and all that stuff. And I did that for 6 years. So, and that's how I got into this. And, you know, as I developed my skills, I had to develop my own hosting platform for my radio show on the streaming side and started working with Microsoft and in those days, Real Networks, which was a streaming media software provider back then that was streaming audio and video online, and just built my show, got it, and really learned a lot. And then I started helping others, other radio people and other people that were wanting to create multimedia content online to distribute their stuff. And a lot of ways I created a very early version of Libsyn, which I'm working for today. I had my own servers, my own that I had to service and keep up and working with radio shows. But back then I was doing a lot of streaming. So that's kind of how I got into this. And then podcasting started and I kind of stopped doing the radio show and started really working full-time helping others. But I kept podcasting through all that time too.
Amazing. I love the sort of the geology of that, if you will, or the archaeology of that, just going through and figuring out all of the different ways in which you grasped the new technology and you innovated using that new technology. And I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about the mindset that you had that had you go, well, I am an offline marketing person, but you know what? There's something to this whole internet thing. And let me build on that and let me build on the foundation and then add levels. What was going on through your mind? How did you decide, you know what? This is the stuff I want to do.
Well, it really came down to looking at what I did in the offline world and seeing how it could be applied in the online world. And making that translation and maybe even seeing a little bit or experimenting to find new opportunities to take advantage of the digital medium as an improvement or more of from a mixed medium standpoint. I think I was very early in the days of creating written content as well. So I was writing articles for newspapers and magazines back then as well. And I would attach a link to the MP3 file for my radio show to a lot of those articles. So the topics would ride along with a multimedia experience. And back in, this was like in the early 2000s. And so when a person would read the article, they could go over and click in the column, they could click to listen to the audio episode too, which maybe expanded a little bit or was very similar to the written version, because oftentimes I would basically make those articles would actually be sourced off as almost like a transcript of the radio show that I did or the interviews or the topics that I was doing with my radio show at the time, because I was covering a lot of different topics in the technology area back then, whether it be the cultural impacts of the internet or cybersecurity or the latest wireless, initiatives or what the future of wireless communications were back then. In those days, if you think about it, most people were on dial-up connections back then. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't a medium that really people really readily understood. So there was a lot of mysteriousness around what was happening with the cyber world of the internet back then, right? There was movies and TV shows being made, about the mysteries. I think we all have seen the Matrix or whatever. Those type of movies were creating a culture around the internet and the web. And so what this show was really all about was kind of unmasking that and digging into the details of how this really works and how it can benefit people and what it's coming, what's the future look. So that was kind of the purpose of what I was doing back then.
I'm excited to ask you about what's coming. There's so much here that you've just said that I'm absolutely, I'm so fascinated. I want to ask you a real quick question. You said that you did both writing and the MP3, the speaking. This is a strange little question, just as an aside. Do you communicate better speaking or writing, do you think?
Well, the honest truth is, I wasn't really very good at either one, back when I was growing up. I wasn't a good writer, and I had a little bit of a speech impediment. I stuttered as a young kid. Mm. So, and as I grew up, things got a little better. I still struggle with it today. So it was a challenge for me back then. It was more about kind of pushing my envelope of knowing that I had some limitations in what I wanted to do, but I also wanted to be successful too. So I saw this opportunity, right, with the internet and the direction that was going there, and just started, you know, just throwing myself out there and living through all of the mistakes and the struggles and being able to do this, and knowing really at the time that not that many people were listening. So, and I think that's what a lot of people don't comprehend when they start a podcast or they get involved in this medium, is that when you get started, there's really not very many people listening. So it's not like you're exposing yourself to a lot of risk. And what happens is, and this is what happened to me too, is that the better you get, the more people are listening. So there tends to be a safety factor there that a lot of people don't realize. And then sometimes just talking into a microphone and not talking to a person can also get in people's way as well, because it's like, well, what's the point? You know, and some people like to have conversations like we're doing here, and other people like to do solo shows. And it depends on your personality, and you need to recognize what that is. Before you start a podcast or creating content online, what's your comfort area?
Absolutely. And it's so interesting that you just said that, because I feel like the more I do podcasting, and I've been doing this show since 2016, the more I realize how much self-awareness you have in order to be able to do a show weekly or daily or however for a long time, because this isn't a short-term game. It seems like it's a much longer-term game. And I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about that idea of both self-awareness and also the courage a person has to have to go, you know what I'm going to do? I've got stuff to say, and I'm going to start a podcast. What are your thoughts on that? Both self-awareness of what they're good at or what they could be good at, and the courage to start and perhaps fail.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are a lot of people that start this and don't stick with it. And it happens for a lot of reasons. It can happen for just the fact that the person doesn't have enough passion for it, or they don't have enough experience to be able to talk about it on a long-term and regular basis. So you kind of have a lot of factors that go into whether or not a person can be successful or not in creating online content. So I think there is a factor there of just putting yourself out there and taking some risk. And that gets back to what I was saying earlier about the fortunate thing is, I mean, unless you're already a celebrity or you're already have a big following, there's probably not a lot of people listening. So you're fairly safe, I guess is what I'm saying. But I think if you're just getting started, I think just putting yourself out there a little bit and becoming a leader or becoming something that you have passion about is really the key. All of us have kind of a special interest or a special skill. We just need to figure out what that is and try and learn as much, get engaged in as much as you can. And I think it's possible to build a career around pretty much any interest that a person might have. You know, it depends on what that is, how big that opportunity could be. And it also is a factor on what your talents are, what your abilities are too. But those can also improve. Can also get better with practice. Just like, you know, I played competitive basketball for many years myself, and you know, I dedicated myself to that for 13 or 14 years too, and learned and practiced and got better and better and better, and you know, it achieved a lot of success playing basketball too. So a lot of these principles are pretty common around dedication and focus and practice and learning. And if you can do that, I think you can basically do anything you want to. It just depends on how bad you want it.
And in addition, like what you just said about also having passion about it. And that brings me to the next question that I have for you. You're a self-described evangelist for podcasting.
Yeah.
What about podcasting do you love so much that you're excited enough to do it, to go that far into it and to help so many other people go down that road?
Well, I've been doing it now for 16 years, and really probably longer than that, because back when I started doing my radio show, it's been 20 years. I think at the core, it was for me personally, it was getting through my stuttering that I had in my younger years and building confidence. Because I think at the end of the day, it's around confidence and trust in yourself and being calm as a public speaker and getting out in front of people. And I felt very early also that with the internet and the growth of online media that all of us were going to become content creators at some point, whether it, and that view of content can be pretty broad. I mean, look at what all of us are doing now because of the pandemic. We all have webcams, we're all doing Zoom calls, we're all, you know, everybody really has been doing what I've been doing for 16 years now, is creating online content, whether it's for our job, for our work, or a passion project like a podcast. And there's a lot of people that are creating careers around podcasting now, too. I mean, the last time I looked at LinkedIn, there was a lot of people out there with podcast in their experience titles now that I've never seen before. I mean, there's just so many companies out there now. There's so much more money and interest in this podcasting medium now that people are building work careers around it. Not everybody's behind a microphone anymore. That's the other big change. Most of the people in the industry in the past were people like myself that were on mic every week. But now you got ad salespeople, you have producers, you have editors, you have marketing people that are working actively for companies and platforms. I've been working professionally in a podcast hosting business and content distribution business for 16 years myself. So there's just a lot of opportunity. And back when I started, there weren't really that many jobs. I mean, I used to work for Microsoft and built their Zoom podcasting platform back in the very early days of this medium. Those kind of jobs were pretty rare back then, but now they're not. And so you can create a career for yourself as a creator, podcaster, creator, or you can apply other business skills that you might have to the podcasting medium.
It's so interesting to me how this all, it grows one to the next. You know, one of the things that you just said really struck home. I used to have a public speaking phobia. And in fact, it's not why I started the podcast, but I wanted to keep reminding myself, if you will, that there's creative work to be found, that there is a message that I have. And I think a lot of podcasters are trying to do that, that they're passionate about whatever it is they're doing and that they want to get the message out about it. And something that I really, in sort of doing the research on this conversation, I love that you work with and want to work with creatives. I think that's so wonderful. And I was wondering, how is it different from working with more sort of analytical or business-oriented people? How are the two different for you? And what do you focus on with a creative who is podcasting or who wants to podcast rather than a business that wants to podcast?
Well, it is a different conversation. And fortunately, I've had a lot of experience on all sides of that. You know, from a technology perspective, I spent a lot of years, you know, I've been a CTO at Podcast One before, so I've been on the technical side to some degree, but I don't consider myself to be an engineer or a programmer or anything like that. I have a business major that's been focused on marketing and really media my whole career. So I'm really more of a content guy, but I know enough about technology to be helpful and to contribute to conversations and understand. And I think that's a big part of it too, is just understanding this and being able to apply context to it from a perspective of, you know, like a historical reference to where the technology is in the context of the past and what it looks like maybe in the future. So, you know, having that, if you look at my job title is content and partnerships, that is a little bit of a unique title in some ways, because, and especially when it applies to the actual work that I do, is being able to walk that line from being able to get on a call and talk with Google about the platform side, right, the distribution, the listening mm-hmm. side, and then be able to get on a call with a content network or a podcaster and be able to help them too. So usually you see people that kind of live in one world or the other, but being able to live in both of those worlds, because I've been in both of those worlds, is really, I think, the key to what I've been doing in the podcasting space for a long time. And it puts me in a position of being able to build partnerships and build relationships across the whole medium, because there are, and I've been on the advertising side to some degree too. My work at Podcast One, which was primarily an ad sales network, put me in the advertising world too. So you've got the distribution, advertising, and content side as my background. And I can talk to everybody involved. And that's what's put me kind of in the middle of the industry. And that's a place that I love to be, because I love bringing people together, and I love building collaborations and building win-win relationships and building partnerships that can help other people succeed in what they're doing. And I think that's the key to my work in the podcasting space and how I've tried to apply those principles to what I do every day.
I'm just taking all of that in for a second, because it sounds like you're straddling multiple worlds mm-hmm. and also being the connector among all of those worlds. What happens inside you? Like, I keep, you know, this is the Innovative Mindset Podcast, so I keep right. thinking about it in those terms. Like, what happens in the way you approach challenges or projects or collaborations when you're trying to build those bridges between disparate perspectives?
Right. Well, I think the first thing that I see is I default see that I really don't have any competitors out there. And I think that is the key takeaway from my history in this, is that I've always seen a marketplace with the internet specifically as a collaborative area that people can share, and they can help each other, and they can partner to success. I think the old line thinking of the past and in regards to business has been more, you know, take and hold and not share, right? Mm. So there's been a very competitive thing that's been going on in the business world for a long time, and I came out of that world coming out of college. My early years working for big brands in the grocery business, mm-hmm. And how people view others as competitors. And I kind of saw opportunities when the internet came around of collaboration and working together to create win-win relationships. Where just because a competitor is out there, and there are examples of direct competitors versus collateral competitors that are doing something similar, but there may be this common interest that mm-hmm. we can collaborate on mm-hmm. that has driven me to be in a role like this, is to look at competitors or collaborators in the same light to some degree. And I think early in the development of the World Wide Web and the internet, I got sucked up into the vision of that the web, the World Wide Web, was really built on collaborative sharing. People would cut and paste HTML code out of one website and use it in another. So the free and open platform of HTML, and to some degree even RSS now, these open standard technology formats have been things that have fostered some some development and sharing and growth in areas that wouldn't normally have happened. And that's kind of, I think, where it pointed me into this direction of more focusing on creating win-win relationships as a strategy, really, towards sales and asking questions and overcoming objections, which has always been a key thing in sales. And but I think as you look at the internet and the web, that process of discovering objections is more just learning and solving people's problems.
I like the reframing of that sales is learning and solving people's problems. Which do you think came first here, as far as the advent of the internet and the mindset shift that allowed that to happen, that we went from this more competitive to perhaps a more collaborative way of looking at working in the internet or as distributors and content creators? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think that to some degree, and maybe as if I look back and give it some perspective, is that I think as the internet and the web, and I say those specifically because they are two different things. I think a lot of people mix them together, but has been, like I said, a pretty collaborative medium that has been developing that's new. But I think as big business has got involved and as the internet has scaled to be ubiquitous in our culture and in the world, I think some of those old principles have started to come showing up more and more, where competitors are viewed as competitors and there's a little less collaboration going on. I think that most of the collaboration that goes on today in large degree is usually amongst smaller companies, not so much the bigger companies. I think there's less collaboration now than even in the early days of the internet around the larger companies. If I think back to the early days of the internet with large companies, is they were actually created by, you know, like one guy in the company in the marketing department or in the technology area or in the information management area that would come up with a website for the company, and the CEO of the company didn't even know about it. You know, I mean, that was my experience too. I used to work for the Florida Department of Citrus, and this was back in 1997, 1996. And I created the first website for the Florida citrus industry called floridajuice.com is what it was back then. And I'm the one that went and got the domain name. And I'm just like a marketing rep working for the organization. Now, my boss worked for the governor of the state of Florida back then, but I was working with grocery retailers back then. I was creating integrated promotions with Tropicana, Minute Maid, all those kind of folks with the big grocery chains. And so I went out and then I got a website domain name. I had an agency built because I had a marketing budget. I got an agency that was cutting edge around building websites back then. They built me a website and I started doing sweepstakes and giving away sailboats off of my website. This was back in 1996, 1997. And it took about a year or so, but the executive director of the Florida Citrus Commission finally started hearing about what I was doing up in the Seattle, up in the Northwest, and was a little bit freaked out about it. You know, it's like, you know, he was losing control because what I was doing out there was working, and a lot of these big retailers were getting behind it. I was running billboard campaigns in Seattle for giving away a sailboat, and had a website URL up there, and had a really compelling website for what I was doing. So I was really creating a national campaign, but at the time I was treating it as local. So it was, and it just, you know, that's the kind of thing that I think happened at a lot of the big corporations in the early days. And now it's just ubiquitous that everybody has to have a website. Everybody has to have an app. Everybody, and things have changed. And I think people are starting to get a little more siloed. I think you're seeing it in the media world today, and you get the large corporations, you know, building their proprietary silos. We're seeing it happen in podcasting too. You know, you look at Spotify or you look at iHeart, you look at, you know, and these vertically integrated platforms are starting to pop up even in the internet world. You know, you look at what Amazon has done to our world and how they've vertically integrated everything. So, you know, the competitive paradigm has completely shifted.
It really has, you know, and yeah. It's funny what you say about Amazon. I do remember when Amazon just sold books. That's how old I am, right?
Right. Oh, yeah. I remember those days, too. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, you said something that I think is something I want to really delve into, this idea of everybody needs to have an app, everybody needs to have a website. How do you feel about that with respect to podcasting? Because, and especially with artists and creatives, every artist and creative, if you want to do it to make money, you need to be a business nowadays. So is that a logical next step for someone, for an artist or a creative type person? Is that their own app or their own podcast? What do you think about that?
Well, I do think that podcasting isn't for everyone. I do think that people gravitate towards certain types of methods and processes for how they communicate in the world. But I do think more broadly, that we all need to be good on a microphone. We all need to be good on camera these days because of how the world has changed. And I think that that we all need to really understand that these changes are very fundamental to how we're going to be able to make a living and to develop as humans. Spoken word is becoming extremely important. I mean, just look at these smart speaker platforms that are out there from Google and Amazon and how important voice is now. I think voice and video are really going to be huge in the future. And you know, look at our human existence. I mean, what do we do? We speak and we see, right? Now, granted, we smell too, and we hear. The smelling part is, the funny story about the smelling part was in the very early days when I was doing my radio show, that there was a couple of startup companies that I talked about on my radio show that were trying to create digital smells too across the internet. So you could actually integrate this little processor into your computer that would would emit a digital smell, right? Wow. So you could share the fragrance of a recipe or something like that. So, you know, you start thinking about all the senses that we have as humans and apply that to what our computer experiences are. And I think you can really see where we're heading and where the future might be. And that's always the lens that I've used to look at technology, is that it was always going to be reflective of who we are and our particular bent towards our senses.
That's fascinating. I'm actually really grateful that there isn't a sort of smell the internet to be.
It can be good smells and bad smells, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Well, but also, you know, my husband is an actual clown. He was a clown with the circus, so I can only imagine what kind of smells he and his clown buddies would be sending across the internet. I'm not sure that's a good thing. But right. there's something here that is so fascinating to me. That is, it's about this idea of looking to the future, but also remembering that not everyone has the same capabilities. You know, I worked at NASA for many years, and we had to be ADA compliant. So nowadays it's pretty simple. You can get a transcript of your podcast or you know, if someone is deaf, they can look at it. Someone who's blind can get the audio, all of that. So how do you, as someone who's looking to the future, how do you see that part of it flowing as far as podcasting and as far as video in order for us to be able to employ those senses, especially with the lens of not everyone has the same senses to employ?
Right. And I think that is a very good point. And we do have the ADA, which is the Disabilities Act. And I do believe that probably needs to be modernized a little bit. I think it's a little long on the tooth and a little dated in its interpretation of the needs of the present. So hopefully the Congress or whoever can get back in there and make it more applicable to the real world. But I do think that some of the technology companies have interpreted that law and started making proactive changes. I know that there's been some legal challenges of some podcast networks, specifically ones that are associated with Spotify. I think the Gimlet folks, there's some sort of a lawsuit going on right now around access to their spoken word content and how there is a challenge based on the ADA's basically interpretation of applying it to a podcast. And so I think that the podcasting companies need to assess that and make sure that that's built into their plans going forward. I think transcripts are part of the solution. And I know the company I work for, Libsyn, has been is really focused on transcripts as something that's important for podcasting. And I think what we've been really focused on is trying to find the most accurate transcripting process and company that is out there. And I'm sure we will partner with such company that will be able to offer accuracy. I think it's very important, especially as you look at being able to support it in players and listening experiences, to be able to have those transcripts be accurate. So I think that's been where I think it's fallen down is getting access to this content for the diverse use case has been a technology challenge that hasn't always been prioritized. And I saw it when I was working at Microsoft. I've seen it at a variety of different companies. Companies prioritize it more than others. And I think a lot of the reasons why it hasn't been prioritized is because the ADA law hasn't been modernized. I think a lot of people think that when they refer to radio, that it only applies to radio, right? So podcasting has been one of those things that's been a little in, you know, it's not just podcasting, it's online media. Really isn't really fully embraced in that law entirely. So, but anyway, I think that there's a responsibility of every technology company to look at that and optimize their software experiences and access to the content that flows through them.
I'm so glad to hear you say that. That's fabulous, because it is so important to make sure that we are giving as much access as possible to whoever wants to consume the content. And I want to pivot just a little bit, if I could, and I would love to ask you some questions about the new media show. What led you to starting this particular show? I know you said you've always looked to the future. And is it part of that? Is it that idea of wanting to prognosticate or to evaluate or assess what's going to happen? What are your thoughts on that? What drives you to keep doing the show semi-weekly forever and ever?
Right. Well, if I go back to the very genesis of that show, it's rather unique in the podcasting space. I think it's at least 10 years old. I've lost track how many years we've been doing it now. But it's a show that was really designed to talk about the industry of podcasting and the direction of it. And that is, you're right, that is a common interest that I have around being able to look at particular markets and think about the future and think about how they can get better and to be a little bit of a check on things that can happen that may be not good for a particular industry. Now, granted, that can be an interpretational challenge as well, given the climate that we're in right now around facts versus opinion that are challenging our world more broadly. But the reason that show exists is because of a friendship that was developed between myself and Todd Cochran, who's the CEO of one of my, a direct competitor of Libsyn. So, but that friendship was started way before I ever worked for Libsyn. I've only been with Libsyn for about a year and a half, year and three quarters. So I've been with a variety of other companies and continue to do that show. Mm-hmm. So, doing a show with a competitor is kind of unusual these days. you know, and being able to talk about things in a show in a fairly collaborative way about an industry in general. I mean, when was the last time you saw two CEOs of two competitive companies doing a podcast together? I mean, it's kind of unusual, right? And that is seen as an opportunity at the same time, and it's a reflection of my values, and it's a reflection of Todd's values, of coming out of the earlier things that I was talking about collaboration and sharing of information and being transparent in your markets and having a common interest in the common good, and not so much focused on competition. Though I felt in that show over the last couple of years that maybe there's been a little bit of competition that's come into the play just because of the very nature of both of our work mm-hmm. that we have that compete against each other. But we also see a common ground of sharing and collaborating too, and having a view that we can both agree on, and that is the common interest of a podcaster. And that podcasters have different needs, and each of our platforms can cater to those individual needs. And it's okay if somebody wants to be on Blueberry, or they want to be at Podbean, or they want to be at Anchor or whatever in the bigger picture of things. Mm-hmm. Because if we know as people that if we're helping the podcaster succeed in growing their show or whatever that their ambitions are, that eventually they may move to want to work with the person that was the most helpful to them. So I think that there's inherent responsibility that we have to be good stewards of relationships. And because building trusted relationships builds long-term relationships, thus builds stronger companies.
Absolutely. And your point is well taken, especially with that old cliche, a rising tide lifts all boats. So those relationships that you're building, people remember. There's a Maya Angelou quote that something along the lines of, they won't remember what you said, they won't remember what you did, but they will remember how you made them feel. Right. And those kinds of relationships are so important for that. And that brings me, I have so many questions. So that brings me to the next thing that I wanted to ask you. You said something earlier that made me pause. You said, okay, at first, very few people are listening unless you're a celebrity. But what if you do want to build those relationships? What if you do want to build a community? How does a new podcaster do that? They're just starting out with Libsyn or Podbean or somebody else. How do you do that when you're just starting out? What are your thoughts as far as either creating content or reaching out, marketing, to build a community, not just listeners, but an actual community of people who are active participants right. in the podcast experience?
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, building a podcast audience is a one-to-one process. Mm-hmm. You're building a relationship with one person. And that one person turns into two people if you build trust. And you build it to three people if those two people trust. So, because people will share with others that have a common interest, people that they trust. So you're building relationships one by one. That may not be what a lot of people want to hear, but there's also a mathematical principle here, is that builds one to one, and then two to two, and then four to four, and six to six. And so you can see how growth can happen. Mm-hmm. It's based on building. So a lot of podcasters feel disappointed because, you know, I got 100 downloads or something like that. Well, my comment back to them was, when was the last time you got up in front of 100 people and presented to them?
Right.
You know, just because you only have 100 listeners to an episode doesn't make you a failure. But a lot of podcasters will think that because they'll see, you know, Joe Rogan got 10 billion, so I must be a failure, right? Mm-hmm. So that's what we're battling at all points in this medium. And each podcast has its addressable market opportunity based on what that topic is, mm-hmm. based on what the talent is, based on the distribution strategy that you have. So at the end of the day, starting a podcast is not tremendously much different than starting a business. You have to find out who you're trying to reach. And also, more importantly, what is your passions and what do you want to accomplish? What are your goals that you want to do? And just realizing that that's going to change over time. And the show that you produce is going to change over time. I know very few podcasters that started creating a podcast that they're doing the same thing that they started from episode one, 50 episodes in, because they learned, they listened to their audience. They tapped into how they felt about what they're doing and the feedback that they got or not. They were critical of what they thought drove value to their listener. And that's how you grow a show. And more tactfully here, from a tactics perspective, I do think that having a website presence is important these days. Mm-hmm. Google is getting into podcasting in a big way. And I think that there's general consensus across the industry that the biggest growth opportunity is going to be via Google. For podcasting going forward, you're already starting to see the research is starting to show that the number one discovery method now for finding a podcast that you might want to listen to is via search. And that's not search inside of Apple Podcasts, that's search inside of Google. Google is now supporting podcasting in a more significant way. So you can actually get directly to the content in Google now. Google has its own app. I think Android is the other big opportunity in podcasting. So making sure that you're supporting, whether it be Spotify, whether it be Google Podcasts and stuff, reaching Android listeners more and more. That's the largest mobile handset in the world is Android. It's not Apple. Apple has a subset. Apple's like 20 or 30% of the market if you look on a global scale. So, Android is where the future of podcasting is and going to be. And those Android devices are getting better, better all the time. So, that would be where I would focus. I mean, Apple is just a given. I mean, it's going to keep 50, 60% of the market easy for the foreseeable future, but there's going to be a growing number of listeners over on Android, even outside of the U.S. The U.S. is actually growing faster, or outside the U.S. is growing faster than in the U.S. as far as listeners go. So your international opportunities are growing at a very fast rate as well. And I mean, podcasting has always been an international medium, so it isn't something that's new to the medium. I mean, my old a radio show that I did online was listened to in like 120 countries or something like that. So it's still, but it's just growing so much bigger now than ever before.
Okay. So if you are a podcaster who lives in Des Moines, Iowa, and you want to reach people in Europe and in Asia and mm-hmm. wherever the other parts right. of the world are.
Right.
What should you be doing differently, if anything, as far as the creation of your show? Should there be in your show notes, should there be translations? Should there be, or is it pretty much, okay, you do it in the language you start and hopefully the people who want to listen to it will be able to?
Yeah, I think that's the answer. I do think that there is a responsibility for most podcasters, it's growing, and that is to, depending on the topic and what you're trying to do and what your goals are, is strip out localized information about your topic, right? Make it more applicable to everyone, not mm-hmm. so much talk about subjects that are related to just the U.S. But some shows, they have to do that because that's the very fabric of what they're doing in their podcasts is mm-hmm. about something that's going on in the U.S. But I think if you're wanting to get listenership outside of the U.S., I think you need to be sensitive to listeners that maybe don't have an interest in, like 4th of July or something like that, right? That's only a U.S. thing. So, you may not want to spend time talking about something that you did on the 4th of July or something like that, because that's a U.S.-centric thing. Mm-hmm. So that would be my only real comment there. And you know, and this is hard sometimes, is to think about topics and issues in your podcast that have impact outside of the U.S. as well. And that requires the podcaster to access information about their area of interest that is outside of the U.S. too. And sometimes that can be a little overwhelming, because there's so many places outside of the U.S. that maybe have some connection to the topic that they're doing, and it may be difficult to get information about that. But if you can, that can really expand the horizons and the expectations of your audience. And what you deliver to your audience is a more of an international kind of bent or take on the podcasting and what you're doing. I think a big revolution that's happened in the podcasting medium itself is a newsletter that came out. It's called Pod News, that basically covers topics about podcasting that's happening all over the globe. And it's really opened people's minds to really how big this medium really is.
I'm going to have to put Pod News in the show notes for this. That's amazing. Right. Well, so let's compare for a second. We have, I remember the stat came out that we passed 1 million podcasts back in March, and it's probably significantly higher than that now.
Yeah.
But there are over 500 million blogs out there. So on some level, podcasting is a much sort of smaller medium, if you will. What are your thoughts on that with respect to growth and podcasting in the future? Will everyone have a podcast? And if so, I mean, right now, anyone with a phone and an app can start a podcast if they want. There's anyone who has that. So what are your thoughts? Where are we going with respect to that?
Well, I think that the current market for podcasting today on the content side, and this is shows, is about 1.8 million now, is the current number, of which about 40% of that are active shows. Mm. So 40 to 50% in that range are actively producing new episodes like in the last 90 days. So you can kind of see that, sure, we've got 1.8 million, but that is really 1.8 million mostly since the beginning of podcasting's time. There, you know, Apple has been going through and deleting shows that have dead RSS feeds or don't have content or whatever. So they've been cleaning out their catalog pretty aggressively over the last couple of years. So as far as the growth of that side of things, I think it is still relatively small. And I think a lot of people think that, well, there's 1.8 million shows, that's too many shows. And it's, you know, there's too many people involved and I can't benefit in this medium anymore because there's just too much competition. Well, I would half that number in half and just realize that's a global number. And just like you said, how many blogs or websites are there out there? There's a lot. But the same kind of principles apply to podcasting that apply to websites. I mean, most of the websites out there don't get much traffic. So it's shows that are able to tap into a market that has an interest group that values the content is the game, right? So if you can go in and evaluate all the shows that are in your particular genre of topic area and look at them and evaluate them and say, well, what are they doing good? What are they doing bad? What can I do in this genre that's different or better? Or can I bring something to the table that's takes things to another level or whatever? I think that's the phase that we're in right now, is that some genres have a lot of competition, other genres don't. And other genres are maybe underserved. So it's just finding that perfect combination of what your interests are and then looking into what's currently out there and evaluating. But yeah, I think it's still very early days for podcasting as a medium. Radio is just, you know, the last couple of years has really just jumped into it. And I think now, because of the pandemic, they see the world of radio kind of in a state of decline. A lot of the reason for that is because of consolidation that happened in the radio industry, but also, unfortunately, a lot of small businesses have gone out of business because of COVID. And their base of advertising around local advertising is drying up. And that's causing a lot of crisis in the radio industry right now. So podcasting is like is a more of a national medium and becoming more and more an international medium. And that is a big opportunity for a media company. And a lot of the radio companies are media companies at their core, and they're starting to shift to become that.
I think it's so interesting. I was a DJ back in the day, many, many moons ago, and it seemed like then it was rarefied air you breathed if you were a DJ in the broadcast industry, and it has changed so much. But when we look at COVID, when we look at the sort of, I don't know, almost undulations we are all having to do to live and thrive in the new future, where do you see all of this headed? The broadcast moving into it, businesses are starting podcasts, individuals, as I said, anyone who wants to can start it. But where do we go from here in a way that perhaps will be collaborative at its core?
Mm, yeah, I think that's a key point, because podcasting at this point has been mostly a one to a few, one to many type of a medium. And that is a little bit still living in the old media world to some degree, where we do a show, we record it, and we put it out, and people listen, right? That is more aligned with the radio experience, except for what's missing is the live component, right? Mm-hmm. And that live connection with the audience that a lot of talk radio created in the earlier days, where callers would call in, right, and participate mm-hmm. in the show itself. So we're kind of at this phase now, and this gets back to what I was saying earlier about looking at behavior that is viewed more analog and converting it to digital. And I think we're starting to see the birth of collaborative conversational platforms being developed. There's one that's growing right now called Clubhouse.
Right.
And it's one that's creating conversational sessions inside this platform that are not unlike what happens to some degree at trade show conferences, where you mm-hmm. have a panelist or panel. People are in the room listening to that panel. But what's different about this is that this technology allows the audience to participate in that discussion actively, more so than just like at a convention where some couple people from the audience come up to a microphone and ask a question of the panelists. Mm-hmm. What happens in this Clubhouse experience is that people can be brought up on stage and actually contribute to the conversation and be a part of the content, not so much just asking questions of the experts. The experts are not really that important in this area. The audience is seen as the pool of experts. And that is something that has been missing from podcasting is the audience engagement part, which has always been a little separate. So I think that what we're seeing right now, and we're going to see it from Twitter, and I believe there's other platforms that are popping up that are going to do a better job of integrating audience conversations in the show creation process or the show creation. Now, Clubhouse is a replacement for podcasting. Mm-hmm. I think their terms of service actually don't really want their participants to make podcasts on Clubhouse, because the very fabric of the discussions that go on in Clubhouse won't be the same if the audience or the participants know that it's being recorded. There are things talked about there that people don't want to go on record about.
Mm.
So there are conversations that are going on there that are fairly private. There can be 300 people in the room, but they're private conversations.
Mm-hmm.
So, but this collaborational, conversational, social networking platform, I think is what we're going to see happen. And Facebook really hasn't embraced this. Twitter just did an acquisition of a podcast app called Breaker, which was trying to integrate more conversational processes into the podcast listening experience.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we may see is a hybrid that comes from a Clubhouse and podcasting that will enable technology to enable audience to contribute to the content of a podcast, mm-hmm. Where everybody involved knows that this is public information. Mm. So I think that is probably what we're going to see happen next as we see more content vertical platforms start to show up more. Like platforms, these are kind of in replacement for potentially for like a Spotify or whatever, vertical interest platforms, like a platform that's is full of women podcasters, right, that are talking about women's topics, or a black community that's creating a black podcast listening app, or a sports podcast listening app that incorporates many, many sports podcasts. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you're seeing this verticalization that's happening around content, I think, is the next big phase. And then you layer in audience engagement and then other forms of content. And you're starting to see this blended world around media that is going to really cater to the needs of what audience wants. And I think and content creator wants too.
Well, especially if you want interaction with the people who are who are your audience.
We all want to be creators now because we all have webcams. We all have microphones now, right? So, you know, people are becoming more skilled at getting on microphone now than ever before.
And that's really, that sparked something in me. And I wonder about platforms like Twitch, for example, that has a person who is doing a live stream and then you can communicate, but you write. Right. So there's a difference there because you're writing down a comment and they see your comment and then they can respond to the comment. But some of what you're talking about sounds like it's real time. Mm-hmm. You can be involved in the conversation. Right. So this is a strange legality question. At what point does someone who is an quote audience member unquote who is very active in someone else's stream, I'll call it, at what point do they go, okay, wait a minute, I've contributed all this, some of this should be mine? How do we navigate that? How do we negotiate the future of that?
Yeah, I think it's a good question. I'm not sure that there's a simple or easy answer to that. I think we've all accepted the fact that we're freely giving away our content on all sorts of different platforms, right? Whether it be Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, whatever. And the platform really, do they own that content? This is a very much a conversation that happened early in the days of the internet, where a lot of the technologists, evangelists in the very early days were debating this. It's like, well, who owns my stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Who owns the content that I create on all these platforms? Do I own it? I know Facebook has had the ability to export all your stuff out of their platform because they've been under pressure to give their Facebook users the power to control their content. Mm-hmm. I don't know that many people take advantage of it, but I think today you can export all your stuff out of Facebook, but that doesn't mean that Facebook still doesn't have it. So, but I do think that there is a certain layer of conversation that's going to become more and more important around control of the content that we create. Can we change something that we did 5 years ago that's maybe in Google that is in some platform that's, you know, but the good thing that I have noticed is that Google doesn't keep everything up forever. So if something gets out of date, they kind of, it drops off, right, to some degree. So there is a natural kind of attrition that happens around our content creation that happens, though, you know, there may be more archiving going on here than we always realize. And I'm not sure where that is all the time, but I think it is a concern. And I think some companies are really starting to think about, and in podcasting too, how to enable the creator or you, the online participant here, to have control over what you've added to all these platforms. And can I delete it? Can I change it? Can I edit it? Can I, you know, take it down? Can I replace it? You know, those kind of things come up because people more and more, base their careers and based on their futures, based on their participation in what happens on the internet and the web.
Yeah. And we've all heard, you know, what happens on the internet stays on the internet. So that could be a positive
to some degree,
or not.
That's true.
Yeah. Right. And it's fascinating when you say that, when you say, you know, can I change it? Can I delete it? There's almost it feels like we're going to need to have a lot of laws written about what people's rights are with respect to their content. I know, you know, if you have a headshot or whatever, or someone takes your photograph, what rights do you have? But the same goes with what is it that you said. And there's going to be something in Clubhouse, for example, that somebody records something that they're not supposed to, and then it gets out and there's a scandal. I'm sure that'll happen. Yeah. And yet we have to navigate this, because I see this technology, all of these technologies seem like they're bringing us closer at a time when, especially during the pandemic, that we need closeness, but we're not supposed to be in proximity. So, so it's this bizarre sort of push-pull situation. And so when we're looking at that, when I think about that, I think about the difference between being a content creator, like you and I have just been talking about, and being a content consumer. And mm-hmm. if everybody can be a content creator, who are going to be the content consumers? What are your thoughts on that moving into the future?
Well, I do think that there's a lot of people out there that just consume. They don't create. Though I think that it's more and more possible for people to create now than ever before. Mm-hmm. I think if we're specifically talking about podcasting, there are platforms that have started that make it free to start a podcast and make it really easy to create a podcast. So I think that the ease of making this content has never been easier. So, mm-hmm. but there's a price for that too. I mean, ease doesn't necessarily equate to quality. So, sure. or creating content that people want to listen to too. I mean, hard work usually creates content that people want to listen to, not ease of creation. So, unfortunately, I mean, a lot of people don't like to hear that, but that does play out in the numbers that I've seen over the years, is that people that put a lot of energy and effort into producing something tend to get more benefit out of it and build more audiences. Those that just come in and do the easiest thing possible don't usually get as much reward for that. So at least that's the principles that I've seen play out many, many times over the many years that I've been involved in the online media scape. That's not to say that you can't help yourself or harm yourself by just doing minimal amounts. I think you can on both ends of the spectrum. So mm-hmm. be careful what you say and the positions that you take, especially in these times.
Sure. Everything is tumultuous for sure. Yep. So I want to, if that's okay, pivot for a couple more questions if you have time. Thank you. So one of the things that I consider myself a creative, I'm a musician, I'm a writer, blah, blah, blah. Using me as an example and imagining I didn't have a podcast where I talk about innovation and creativity, what would your thoughts be? What would your guidance be to a creative like me who wants to start a podcast? What are the different ways that someone who wants to highlight their either their creativity or their thought process as a creative, what are the different ways they might start a podcast? Should it be collaborative or should it be a how-to, an artist journey? What are your thoughts?
Well, I think that the thing to really think about is that it's a blank canvas. There are best practices that exist around this medium, just based on the learnings of many, many years of people doing it. But at the end of the day, it's a medium that's open to interpretation. It's open to creativity. It's whatever you want to do as a creator is oftentimes, you know, there's this tug of war between, and I think radio folks tend to, have a struggle with this too, is that they tend to think about what the listener wants, right? More than, or maybe what their advertiser wants, more than they think about what they want as creators. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that stems from the fact that a lot of the radio producer announcers were paid to just be talent, right? They were there to do what they were told to do by the by the production organization that existed at the radio station.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think as you look to podcasting, it's really based on what that person's skills are, interests, passions, to build content. And that's a different mindset, right? It's not the same as radio. And I don't know how many times I've had this conversation with radio companies, is that one of the best things you can do is talk to your talent and find out what they do in their off hours. You know, what's their passion? Do they ride jet skis or do they ski or do they, you know, what do they really enjoy doing? Because, you know, when they get on mic, they're going to be animated about that. It's just like with me with podcasting, I get animated about this stuff. I get excited about it. I think about, I spend, you know, all my waking hours thinking about this stuff and talking to other people about it because mm-hmm. I have a passion for it and I care about it and I want to see people succeed. There's a genuine interest there. And that comes across in the audio when it comes to creating this stuff. So, you know, I think people need to really tap into what that is. It can be a career focus too. It can be a job related thing too. Let's say you're a salesperson or you're a marketing person or whatever, you know, that show needs to help you develop as a person or a professional, mm-hmm. as well as build your reputation, build your, opportunities in the market for whatever those goals might be, whether it's selling a book or if it's wanting to get a better job. So, or let's say you want to build a podcast that, you know, makes $100,000 a year in ad revenue. You know, it depends on what your goals are and what you want to do. And your ability to reach those goals is directly proportional to your vision, creativity, and your hard work and talent.
I like how you added that last one in.
Yes.
Oh yeah, don't forget that. And yeah. It's so true. I mean, so much of it, you can have the skills and not the talent, or you can have the talent and not the skills, but ideally you want to have both, and then on top of that a nice dollop of passion. So when we're talking about this, what are the things that you see podcasters doing now that are combining all of those? What are the ways in which you see them growing their audiences and reaching new levels? How is that working?
Yeah, I think that the ones that are most successful are the ones that are doing multimedia strategies. They're not just doing audio. They're not just doing one thing. They're doing multiple things.
Mm.
And I think that takes a lot of dedication, takes a lot of time, it takes a lot of effort. And when I say multiple things, what I'm talking about is they're getting involved in video, they're getting involved in written content, they're speaking at events, they're mentoring other people, they're getting involved in organizations that support their particular interest areas. They're going, hopefully we'll get back to going to conferences and events and being able to connect with others that have a common passion. And those are the folks that are succeeding, are the ones that are seen as leaders, as true leaders,
mm-hmm.
in their particular area of focus, and are helping others to succeed. And not everybody is going to succeed, but at least you can be seen as someone that's not part of the problem, but part of the solution for people's lives.
I love that. And there's something so poignant and simple about what you just said, which seems to me to be, you better love what you do because you're going to be doing it a lot.
Right.
So,
get up in the morning and be excited about what you're about to do, I think is the key. You know, I think if you start doing a podcast and you're not passionate about it, the audience is going to detect that. And you're not going to bring your best energy. You're not going to bring your best knowledge. So make sure it's something that you really care about, and that'll come across in everything that you do.
And seen.
I think
that,
right.
that was beautiful. I love that you said that, and I love how you said it, because we hear about it a lot. We talk about it a lot, you know, oh, you have to live your passions. You have to love what you do. But there are practical reasons for it. In addition to the fact that, hey, you're going to really be enjoying what you're doing, there are practical reasons for it.
Yeah,
so
right.
I Rob, I cannot tell you how much I appreciate you joining me for this time and giving so much wisdom. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much for being here.
Well, thank you for letting me share my thoughts, and thank you for listening to this and for your audience. And I wish your show a lot of luck. It sounds like you're building a network of shows yourself. I mean, not a network of shows, but your episodes that are helping others and sharing, you know, hopefully some valuable information with your listeners.
Well, this has definitely been valuable. So, yeah. So thank you very much. I will put all of the stuff in the show notes, so we don't have to go through any of the social media. And there are plenty of ways to find Rob Greenlee. So they will all be in the show notes for you who are listening. I want you to know that, because obviously Rob knows his stuff and is a wonderful person to boot. Rob, I have just one question before we end. It's a silly question that I ask everybody, but I find that it gives some poignant answers. And the question is this: if you had a plane that could skywrite anything for the whole world to see, what would you say?
Oh boy. Put yourself in someone else's shoes.
Perfect. I love it. I love it. That's wonderful. There's so much kindness in that one phrase. I love, love, love it. Thank you so much.
Yep.
Well, thank you. Rob, again, thank you. I really appreciate you being here. And, well, you know, you're welcome back anytime.
All right. Well, thank you. I appreciate it. It was fun to talk with you. Yeah, it was a great interview. I thought you did a great job.
Oh, aren't you sweet? Thank you. Well, this is Isolde Trachtenberg for the Innovative Mindset Podcast, feeling all happy and giddy that Rob Greenlee said that I interview well. I hope that you have enjoyed today's episode. And if you have, I'd love to hear from you. Let me know what you're thinking, especially on some of these most recent episodes where we're really delving deeply into innovation, creative thinking, and how we can use it in our careers and in technology. Until next time, this is, again, Isolde Trachtenberg, and I remind you to listen, learn, laugh, and love a whole lot. Thanks so much for joining me today. I really appreciate you being here. Today's episode was produced by Isolde Trachtenberg and is copyright 2020. As always, please remember this is for educational and entertainment purposes only. Past performance does not guarantee future results, although we can always hope. Until next time, this is Isolde Trachtenberg, and I send you all of my love.